أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد verse number 33 of Surah A'raf أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قل إنما حرم ربي الفواحش ما ظهر منها وما بطن والإثم والبغي بغير الحق وأن تشركوا بالله ما لم ينزل به سلطانا وأن تقول الله ما لا تعلمون Say, my Lord has only forbidden indecencies, the outward among them and the inward ones, and sin and undue aggression, and that you should ascribe to Allah partners for which He has not sent down any authority, and that you should attribute to Allah what you do not know. After mentioning in the previous verses that you are allowed to use the zina of this world, خُذُوا زِينَتَكُمْ عِنْدَ كُلِّ مَسْجِدٍ Take your adornments, and no one has forbidden that for you. قُلْ مَنْ حَرَّمَ زِينَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَخْرَجَ لِعِبَادِهِ Who has forbidden this to you? Then the question comes, okay, what is forbidden for us? Here, in this verse, the address is to clarify what is forbidden for you. قُلْ إِنَّمَا حَرَّمَ رَبِّيَ الْفَوَاحِشِ إِنَّمَا, when it's... comes at the beginning of a sentence, it establishes an extra meaning for that sentence. And that means that what is mentioned in the sentence is included and intended, and what is not mentioned here is excluded. That means only and only. Innama means only and only. My Lord has only and only forbidden. So anywhere you see innama, the meaning of the sentence which follows it is included as intended, and whatever is beyond that or other than that is excluded. Innama harrama rabbi al-fawahish. Now, four things are mentioned here. Fawahish, whether inward or outward, or whether overt or covert. Fawahish are forbidden, ithm is forbidden, baghy is forbidden, and tushriku billahi ma lam yunazzil bihi sultana, making associates for God. And sorry, a fifth thing as well, that you say, attribute to God what you do not know. So these are the only five things which are forbidden in Islam. Because it says innama, these are the only five things which are forbidden for us human beings. When I say in Islam, I mean for human beings receiving a revelation from God, because all religions have been Islam since the beginning of the life of man on this earth. So there are only five things which are forbidden. First of all are fawahish. Fawahish is the plural of fahisha, and fahisha is a violation of ethical norms, which is regarded to be very enormous, something which is quite abhorrent in the eyes of God and in the eyes of people who worship God. This is fahisha. Now, the exegetes usually, when they want to give an example of fahisha, they mention fornication, homosexual relations, and things like these, which are regarded to be really indecent in the eyes of the of every religion. These are the fawahish which are mentioned. So first of all, of course, because of the enormity of fawahish, the first thing that should be mentioned are fawahish. And then, of course, ma zahara minha wa ma batan means whether you do it openly or you do it privately, it doesn't make any difference. Because some people thought that if these things are done hiddenly, it doesn't matter. if it is not somehow spread in society, it doesn't matter. It says it matters. It should be something. These indecencies are things which should be avoided under any circumstances. Now, the Exodus also mentioned one other thing, and which was a custom of the Arabs of the time. Two things were the customs, and one of them was a point of discussion here in these verses as well. One was that when they wanted to do tawaf, they just went naked. The Exodus says this is ma dhahara minha. This is quite apparent and overt indecency, that you come out naked. And nakedness actually was regarded to be one of the most enormous indecencies, one of the highest of fawahish in the eyes of people of religion. And you see that every religion, I mean, be it Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and other religions, when people want to really become religious, when people want to really dedicate themselves to God, they cover themselves. Women, men, they cover themselves, and that is why nakedness was regarded to be one of the most enormous indecencies. This is one. And then, of course, something which was not very much apparent in the society that people did that clandestinely was adultery. And so they mention ma dhahara minha wa ma batan as examples, the exegetes mentioned, that nakedness when they wanted to do tawaf, and adultery or fornication which was done privately. But however, this is very general. Fawahish, whatever indecency which is regarded to be enormous in the eyes of Sharia, of God, this is fawahish. Ma dhahara minha wa ma batan wal ithm. Now, the meaning of ithm, ithm is any violation, of course. However, it is regarded to be an indecency which is just below fahisha. The enormity of it does not reach the level of fawahish. And the example they mention is like, for example, drinking wine, drinking alcohol. This is a sin, certainly it's a sin, but it's not a sin as enormous as adultery or fornication or something like that. And therefore we understand, even here in the Quran and in other places, that the sins have different levels of enormity, have different levels of ugliness. And ithm, in the literal sense, means any harm. And that is why the sin is called ithm, because it brings harm to people. And for example, about wine and gambling, the Quran mentions that يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ. There is great harm in these things. It brings lots of harm to you. وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ. Of course, there are benefits as well. It entertains you, it gives you a relaxed sort of mentality or whatever. These are manafi'. However, there is great harm as well. And the justification for forbidding alcohol and gambling in the verse is that قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ. There is great harm in them. وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ. But وَإِثْمُهُمَا أَكْبَرُ مِن نَفْعِهِمَا. The harm is bigger than the benefit. So ithm initially is harm. However, it is used for sin because any sin would bring harm to human being, to the one who commits it. So, and sin, قُلْ إِنَّمَا حَرَّمَ رَبِّيَ الْفَوَاحِشَ مَا ظَهَرَ مِنْهَا وَمَا بَطَنْ وَالْإِثْمِ. This was the second. وَالْبَغْيَ بِغَيْرِ الْحَقِّ. بَغْي is aggression, transgressing one's rights and intruding into other people's rights. This is another thing. So fawahish may not somehow intrude in other people's life and rights. Ithm also may not intrude in other people's right and life. However, as an individual act, this is regarded to be forbidden. Baghi is a social thing. When you are in interaction with other people and you transgress, you intrude into their rights, then that is baghi. And of course, this is baghi b'ghayr al-haq, because sometimes this intrusion is rightful. Sometimes it's done by mistake. Sometimes it's done by misconception. Now, of course, never baghi should happen, however, under misconception or mistake, but these are the things that Allah may forgive. And sometimes you have to actually intrude into other people's rights, because they would intrude into great sins and into great oppression if you do not stop them. So usually in the Quran, whenever baghi is mentioned, bighayr al-haq is also mentioned. Whenever dhulm is mentioned, because dhulm means baghi bighayr al-haq. Dhulm is always bighayr al-haq. There is no dhulm. No dhulm can be justified. No oppression can be justified. However, baghi is always has a caveat of bighayr al-haq. Like, for example, qital, or battles, killing. Always killing bighayr al-haq is forbidden, not killing on the standards of haq. So, wal baghiya bighayr al-haq, this is three. Now, these three are in the area of practice and action. Then there are certain things in the area of conception, belief, two of which are mentioned here. So three were in the area of practice and action, and two in the area of belief. وَأَن تُشْرِكُوا بِاللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ سُلْطَانًا. And that you should ascribe to Allah partners for which He has not sent down any authority. And sultan means burhan, means hujjah, proof. If you have a proof that there are associates for God, then of course you will be forgiven. If you have an authority which tells you there are associates for God, there are partners for God, you are forgiven. However, there is no such a thing. In the Quran, in all places, it mentions that there is no such an authority. And by authority, of course, it means an authority which is reliable, not just imaginations and hallucinations of people or beliefs just based on conjectures and guess and something like that, that, for example, these idols will help us, our fathers were worshipping them. These are not hujjah. And especially sultan. Sultan is stronger than burhan. Now, Shaykh Tusi rahmatullah alayh, here in his Tafsir al-Tabiyan, mentions that there are four terms which are used in the Quran and for this type of hujjah. One is burhan, the other is bayan, and the other is furqan, and then sultan. Sultan is the strongest. And he says that the difference between these four types of proofs which are mentioned in the Quran is that bayan is to mention, to clarify the meaning of something and the meaning of its opposites. Just mention, clarify. What does this mean and what does the other mean? And then leave this to the choice of the person to choose, relying on the intellectual ability of the addressee to decide which is right and which is wrong. And this is used for Quran as well. هذا بيان للناس. This is a clarification. Clarification means that it clarifies what is right and what is wrong, and then you should choose. Then burhan is to mention a concept which is right, and to try to prove that the opposite is wrong. This is burhan. Of course, this is what we usually in logic try to do. And furqan is to mention the right concept and to try to clarify the things which are similar to it, but are actually not what is meant, not what is mentioned. To remove, furqan is to clarify the subject and to remove the ambiguities and misunderstandings which may surround that. However, sultan is just to mention a burhan which overwhelms other opinions and would absolutely reject the opposite meaning or whatever is intended. So in the Quran, usually, when Allah wants to reject shirk, He says, where is your sultan? Where is this? أَمْ أَنْزَلْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ سُلْطَانًا فَهُوَ يَتَكَلَّمُ بِمَا كَانُوا بِهِ يُشْرِكُونَ. Have we sent down for them a sultan? That is a categorical proof that says that there are partners for God. So this is one thing. There is a very interesting statement in Nahjul Balagha when Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, in his letter to one of his sons, wants to prove that there is no partner for God. He says, وَعْلَمْ يَا بُنَيَّ إِنَّهُ لَوْ كَانَ لِرَبِّكَ شَرِيكٌ لَأَتَتْكَ رُسُلُهُ وَلَا رَأَيْتَ آثَارَ مُلْكِهِ وَسُلْطَانِ. If there was one partner for God, His messengers would have come to you and you would have seen the proof of His kingdom. You would have seen signs of His kingdom. If there was a partner for God, if no messenger has come from anyone else but God, if there is no other proof or no other sign in this world but sign of the one creator, one God, so that means there is no partner for God. So if you have no proof, no sultan, no hujja, and still you associate partners to God, then this is of course forbidden to you, for you. So this was the fourth one. وَأَن تُشْرِكُوا بِاللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ سُلْطَانًا, and that you should ascribe to Allah partners for which He has not sent down any authority. And the fourth, the fifth, sorry, وَأَن تَقُولُوا عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ, and that you should attribute to Allah what you do not know. And this is, of course, a very, very important rule, which is mentioned here as a very general code for religious people. Anyone who wants to somehow establish a relation or connection between themselves and God, you should not say anything, you should not attribute to Him whatever you do not know. Now, the first one, تُشْرِكُوا بِاللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِلْ بِهِ سُلْطَانًا, was of course at a higher level. Associate someone with God. This means after you believe in God, then you say that God has said this, God has said that. And this is what Allah has made forbidden for you. And this, of course, in many, many places of the Quran, because the mushrikun of Quraysh especially used to have lots and lots of customs which attributed that to God. And this should also be a sort of admonition for us, that we should not attribute our customs, our cultures, our traditions to God. There may be many good customs, many good traditions, but by attributing them to God, we commit a very great sin. This is what is forbidden for us. Harrama Rabbi. What Allah has forbidden for you is that you mention things which Allah has, attribute things to God for which you have no knowledge. There is a hadith from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, which says, وَإِيَّاكَ وَخَصْلَتَيْنِ فِيهِمَا هَلَكَ مَنْ هَلَكَ إِيَّاكَ أَنْ تُفْتِ النَّاسَ بِرَأْيِكَ وَأَنْ تُدِينَ بِمَا لَا تَعْلَمُ. This is a very, very deep hikmah here, what is mentioned in the hadith of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. I warn you of two characteristics, two qualities, that anyone who has perished on these two. Anyone means anyone claiming an authority in religion or claiming to be religious. If they have perished, they have perished because of these two. One, إِيَّاكَ أَن تُفْتَ النَّاسَ بِرَأْيِكَ, that you issue fatwa for people based on your own opinion. This is absolutely destruction. Based on your opinion means what? Means that you say, okay, I think this is right, that's wrong. why we should, for example, follow certain traditions or verses of the Quran, which in our opinion does not seem to be right. Of course, fatwa here doesn't mean opinions in ordinary interactions. Opinions which you want to issue for people as a religious authority, that this is what I think religion would say. This is wrong. تُفْتَ النَّاسَ بِرَأْيَكَ وَتُدِينَ بِمَا لَا تَعْلَمُ. And the second is that you believe in things that you have no knowledge of. And this is very common in all generations, among every people, that sometimes because things are in our own understanding very clear for us, we try to say, well, this should be the ruling of religion. It doesn't matter to say, this should be right. That is not fatwa. When we say, this should be right, okay, we think that this is right. However, we don't know why religion says that. This is not something which is a source of destruction. But if you say that, no, in my opinion, this is what religion should say. So, what is our duty here? The duty is to always, if we want to attribute anything to God or to religion, to rely on sources which may lead us to what God wants. This is the only way. And this is issuing fatwa, actually. But fatwa not bira'yina, not based on the opinion, but based on the sources. So the fatwa should be based on sources, not based on opinion. And, of course, tudina bima la ta'lam. However, well, this is clear, I think. Of course, if there is any discussion, we can have it in the discussion time, because this is a very important issue. However, Sheikh Tuzi rahmatullah alayhi mentions one very interesting thing, which even makes the whole issue more complicated. He says that أَن تَقُولُوا عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ أَيْ حُرَّمَ عَلَيْكُمْ ذَلِكَ. This is haram for you to say things attributed to God of which you have no knowledge. He says that وَذَلِكَ يَدُلُّ عَلَى بُطْلَانِ التَّقْلِيدِ. This implies that taqlid is batil. Taqlid is haram. This implies that taqlid is haram. لَأَنَّ الْمُقَلِّدْ لَا يَعْلَمُ صِحَّةَ مَا قَلَّدَ فِيهِ. Because muqallid doesn't know the correctness of what he is following. Because he is actually saying, okay, this is God's injunction. However, he is following someone else in that. How would he know that this is correct? Now, this, as I said, this makes it a bit complicated. However, what makes the issue more complicated is that this is not only the opinion of Sheikh Tusi. The Shia ulama, since the beginning of their intellectual discussions, all have said that taqlid is batil and is attributing to God things that we do not know. So, then, of course, we know that in the issue of ijtihad and taqlid, they say that you either have to be a mujtahid or a muqallid or a muhtat. There is no other way that you can practice your religion. So how do we tally between these two statements? On the one hand, they say taqlid is haram. And, of course, this is based on many, many Quranic verses, which mention that وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمُ اتَّبِعُوا مَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ قَالُوا بَلْ نَتَّبِعُوا مَا وَجَدْنَا عَلَيْهِ آبَاءَنَا. When you tell them that follow what Allah has revealed, they say that we follow what we found our fathers doing. They do taqlid. And Allah very severely criticizes taqlid in the Quran. وَكَذَلِكَ مَا أَنزَلْنَا مِنْ أَرْسَلْنَا مِنْ قَبْلِكَ فِي أُمَّةٍ مِنْ نَذِيرٍ إِلَّا قَالُوا إِلْنَا وَجَدْنَا آبَاءَنَا عَلَىٰ أُمَّةٍ. No prophet went to any nation unless they said, we found our fathers doing this and we follow it, so we do not follow you. And the Quran says, what if your fathers were wrong and this
message is right. Do you not want to think? Do you not want to give it a second thought? You just want to follow your what your father say? So it's strongly criticizes taqlid. However, in our practice, we know that the ulama have actually justified taqlid. Now, there is a very delicate line here, a very fine line here. One is that taqlid is a sort of relying on others without any proof. That you say, because they say it, I accept it. And this is when, for example, someone believes in something, in other people's belief, you follow them. This is taqlid, taqlidul, at-taqlidul haram, ghayrul jais. This is not jais. That because other people believe in something, you believe in it. Because certain ayatollah believes in something to be right or wrong, as a matter of creed, this is haram. You should not follow. But there is another taqlid which is quite rational. And that is taqlid as referring to a specialist. This is what every nation would do, what every people would do. That when they do not know something, they follow a specialist in that. Now, specialist, we don't have a specialist in beliefs. You cannot have. When I tell you, for example, you have to believe in this or believe in that, if you follow me, this is the taqlid which is not jais. And this is what actually all our scholars have said, that taqlid in usul al-din, in matters of creed, is not acceptable. You have, in matters of creed, you have to understand it yourself. Now, you sometimes may say that, okay, because this person is very knowledgeable, whatever he says about the creed, I follow just as a matter of personal thing, but you cannot impose that on others. It's not possible. However, this is just because you are not mature enough. Otherwise, it's not acceptable. You have to have your beliefs, your understanding of faith, based on your reasonable, your own reasoning. In the matters which are concerned, related to practice. Now, in practice, of course. One very simple example which is always mentioned. We have many theories in medicine, for example. You never accept one theory as opposed to another theory based on taqlid. Or saying, because, for example, this scholar, this scientist believes in this theory, I believe in that theory. We are not in a position to judge at all between theories. However, when you go to a physician for treatment, you don't ask them based on what theory you say this or what. You just follow what prescription they give you. Why? Because you are relying on their knowledge in that field. In practice, that is very important. Now, the taqlid, which is based on practice, in ijtihad and taqlid, that is acceptable, because you don't know how you have to practice certain things, you don't have any knowledge of the sources, and you go to a person who has the knowledge. And then you follow the practice. This, as I said, this is not taqlid, this is not the meaning of taqlid. Although we call it taqlid, it's wrong. At the very beginning of the history of this ijtihad and taqlid, I think they chose the wrong term for it. Because taqlid was haram from the beginning among all Shia scholars. And then they chose the same term, which was quite unpleasant, for following a mujtahid. Maybe they should have chosen another term. But this reference to a specialist is not taqlid in this sense, which Shaykh Tusi mentions that according to this verse implies that taqlid is haram. Now, to clarify this further, we might say that the people who do not do taqlid in the practical sense are actually more in danger of أن تقولوا على الله ما لا تعلمون, to attribute to God what you do not know, than those who practice taqlid in the second sense. Let me take you to a discussion between Akhbaris and Usulis in this term, because Akhbaris said taqlid is haram, and they use these verses. They use these verses to say that taqlid is haram. You should not follow any mujtahid. Now, they said that all ijtihad is not based on certainty. It's based on conjecture. That's true. I mean, our mujtahids, when they issue a fatwa, they don't say that this is certainly the ruling which Prophet wanted. They say, probably, to the best of our knowledge. To the best of our knowledge of the sources and the way we can understand them, this is the ruling. And this is only and only good and acceptable for practice, not for anything else. Can you say that this is hukmullah? No, you cannot say that. It's based on conjecture. We have Akhbarul Ahad, single traditions, which has certain ingredients of knowledge in them. They are not fully acceptable. We have our understanding of the verses of the Quran, again, certain ingredients of knowledge in it, not certain. We have certain principles which we have established by our reason, again, not 100% sure whether they are right or wrong. And based on these, we make a conjecture. And we say that this is the ruling. This is, for example, how you have to perform your wuzu. This is the way how you have to perform your salat. Now, the Akhbari said that, what is the reason that this conjecture is hujjah? And they use many verses. If you refer to the book of Mullah Amin As-Sarabadi, he used many verses. وَلَا تَقْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِ عِلْمٍ. Do not follow what you have no knowledge about. And this is what you have no knowledge about. You say this is conjecture. You say this is guess. And still, you follow it. Then they say, if it is a conjecture business, then the conjecture of everyone is same. Why should conjecture of a mujtahid be more acceptable than conjecture of an ordinary person? So everyone can have their conjectures about the rulings of Sharia. And everyone's conjecture is good for them. So everyone can follow their own conjectures. Now, we argue, as Usulis, we argue that, okay, you say that everyone's conjecture is right, but aren't all sciences based on conjectures? They are based on conjectures. Isn't all the medical science based on conjectures? They are based on conjectures. We sent spacecrafts to moon and to other planets based on our conjectures, our theories, and they work. Now, if you have a disease and you go to a physician whose knowledge is based on conjectures usually, on grand theories which are conjectures. In 95% of the cases, whatever they say and we act is correct, works. However, if you take this to ordinary people, to laymen, in 95% of cases, whatever they say is wrong. The same would be the conjecture of a mujtahid and an ordinary person. In 95% of the cases, the conjecture of a mujtahid on a ruling is most probably correct. While in 95% of the cases, the conjecture of an ordinary person is not correct. So the argument, the main argument of Akhbaris here is that the door to the knowledge of the Prophet of Sunnah is closed. We have no access to it. This is acceptable. This is acceptable. The door is closed. Because whatever we have, our single traditions, our understanding from the Quran. However, there is a difference between scientific treatment of the sources and just layman treatment of the sources. So, this taqlid, which we call it taqlid, of course, as I said, this is a wrong term chosen from right from the beginning. This taqlid is based on a rational practice of human beings, that in cases of in cases of importance, in cases or in matters which are of high importance, people usually refer to specialists. Therefore, we exclude ijtihad and taqlid from wa an taqulu ala allahi ma la ta'lamun. This is what the akhbar is trying to bring in, to say that ijtihad is an taqulu ala allahi ma la ta'lamun. You attribute to God what you do not know. Now, the argument is that, okay, we have no other way but to refer to these sources, and these sources would not give us 100% certainty of what we say. However, this is certainly a better attribution, even if we attribute this, although the Mujtahids do not attribute these to God. They say these are our understanding of the sources. Even if we attribute these to God, this is 95% correct, and other attributions are 95% wrong. So we exclude ijtihad and taqlid from this antaqulu ala allahi ma la ta'lamun. Wa li kulli ummatin ajal. There's a very deep discussion here about for every nation there is an appointed time. Inshallah, we leave this for next week. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
Thank you much indeed, Sheikh. I think you have raised a very interesting discussion. It will probably take a few weeks if you were to go over it. But anyway, we'll have to restrict ourselves to 15 to 20 minutes today. I'm sorry to say that, but inshallah, we'll start with Nizar. Can I have the mic, please? Thank you.
Sheikh, thank you so much, as usual. First, a statement and then a question. The statement is that even in a doctor's consulting room today, quite often, with this huge information technology access that we have, patients would quite often challenge the norm based on his reading. And it is not rare for a patient to actually lead the physician to an article or a source which even the physician may not have heard about it. Information technology. So it is different today than what it was in the past. So my point then leads to my question is that, whereas I 100% agree with you, that go to the person who is most knowledgeable in any field, I've got absolutely no worry about it. In the context, since you related and you took medical example, let me just stick to that. So I am a normal general physician. I would rely on someone who is specialist in various fields, only parts of the body we are talking about, one human body, parts of the body. We are not talking about animals, we are not talking about planets, we are not talking about economy, we are not talking about anything else. I rely on those super specialists. What I have difficulty in accepting is one human being to have the knowledge on all the fields of the world. So 100% agree. Whatever a mujtahid is best at, I should go to him. I have difficulty in accepting that I should not be allowed to go from one mujtahid to the other, depending upon who I consider to be the best in that particular field. And I also have difficulty in going further to that a non-mujtahid, a non-alim, might have more knowledge about moon and the moon sighting, an astronomer, then a fiqh alim. Why shouldn't I go to him to understand about the moon?
Yeah. Well, very, very good point raised, actually. First of all, what you say means that you accept the process of ijtihad and taqlid. That means that you do not give, of course, preponderance to the arguments of akhbaris who say taqlid is wrong. So that's established, okay? Now, yes, of course, the discussion has been long a point of concern, even in Hawzas itself. I remember Ayatollah Rafsanjani, Martin Mutahhari, they have raised the issue that the fields which we are now dealing with in any particular area of fiqh are now so vast and so deep that we have to have specialist mujtahids here. Up till now, of course, the mujtahideen would say that you have to follow one mujtahid. But what in future comes, in this practice of ijtihad and taqlid may differ. I mean, people may come up saying that let's have a specialized mujtahids, that one mujtahid is specialized in one field, other mujtahid is specialized in another field, and then we follow them. Okay, that's fair enough. However, we have to also pay attention to another issue, and that is usually we go to mujtahids for things which are not related to them, which are not their knowledge. And that's mawdu'at. Now, since, of course, the beginning of ijtihad and taqlid, the mujtahideen have said that what we are expert in are ahkam, not mawdu'at. Or what is the ruling of Sharia? Now, how you want to apply this in your own life? What is the mawdu' of it? What is the subject of this ruling? It's your decision. You have to say whether this is a subject for this ruling or not. Let me give you one example. Since old times, the mujtahids were of the view that tuna fish is haram because there are no scales. It has no scales. Now, they didn't specifically say tuna fish is haram. They said any fish without the scale is haram. Okay. Now, then they were asked, what about tuna fish? They asked, does tuna fish have a scale or not? People said, no. They said, okay, so this goes under that general ruling. Then other people came and proved that, no, tuna fish has scales. There are small scales on it which we do not see it. And they said, okay, according to the general rule, it should be halal. So which fish has a scale or doesn't have a scale is not the job of mujtahid to find out. And the same is about this issue of moon. This is not something that mujtahid should decide. They just give the general ruling about it. And I think most of these misunderstandings come from the side of the muqalladin. They want to take every mawdu' to mujtahid to just relieve themselves of any sort of intellectual activity, any effort. And this is wrong. This is what has made the whole practice a bit problematic.
Thank you. Want to add something, Nizar? No. Sisters, can we have some response from your side, please? No, any brother? Yes.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Sheikh, this argument that certain people brought forward that because Quran says don't follow your forefathers blindly, or don't follow, you know, is that's not acceptable, and this means taqlid is wrong. Isn't the counter argument to that, well, if a prophet comes and says, don't follow your forefathers, follow me, then they say, well, following per se is wrong, so why should we follow anyone? Mm. And that's the wrong argument. You have to follow someone, there just has to be a judgment on why and what for.
If they have you have to follow someone if they have a hujjah, a proof for what they say. This is the most important thing. The prophets always say that we have a proof. قُلْ إِنِّي عَلَى بَيَّنَةٍ مَّنْ رَبِّي. I have a proof from my Lord for the correctness of what I say. So the whole argument is that do not follow anyone if you do not have any proof for to verify whether they are right or wrong. If those people bring any proof, then of course following is correct. It doesn't matter.
They says, don't the ulama also have proof? And their proof is the hadith and the Quran. And they don't say, blindly follow me because I feel like it. Follow me because, look, this is...
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I said. That their argument is based on proof rather than on ignorance. And the Akhbari's argument is that we follow any ignorance. It doesn't matter which one.
Thank you. Any sisters? Sheikh, just following on this discussion, although we follow mujtahid, and then it is also stated that if we follow them, and then they take part of our responsibility. For example, we follow them, whatever they say, and on the day of judgment, they are kind of responsible for us, that because we followed them and we believed in them, that if there was a blame, then partly it would be on them as well. Because this is, I think, written in books of our Messiah as well?
No, actually the argument is like this, that because you have a proof for what you have done. You see, if on the Day of Judgment, just suppose, in our human terms, of course the Day of Judgment is not like this. But if on the Day of Judgment you go there, and Allah says, why did you perform your salah like this? Okay, you say, well, because I didn't mind do it anyway, in any form. I did it this way. This is not acceptable. Or you say, because I thought this is right. Again, this is not acceptable. Then you say, I refer to a specialist. This is more acceptable, isn't it? You say, I refer to a specialist. He told me that do it this way, and I did it this way. This is the meaning of actually taking responsibility off you. Because you have referred to a specialist, they have told you to do this. We have no other way. The other alternative is just to do it in any way we want or not to do it at all. So this is the meaning. We put it in a sort of terminology which sometimes seem to be unacceptable.
Thank you. Any other sisters or brothers? Yes, can you follow? Thanks.
You know, it was said that we can't follow somebody on belief only in practice. But a lot of the practices are based upon the belief of that particular mujtahid. I mean, I'm just giving a very crude example. It's probably, you know, not linked at all. But if I believe in the justice of Allah, and my understanding of that justice would be that Allah, for example, wouldn't discriminate against another certain belief or a creed of people. But my mujtahid, for example, may say that, no, I can't eat the food of, you know, Hindus, for example. So if that conflicts with my belief in Allah's justice, then do I still follow the mujtahid on that? Or, do you know, I'm a little...
No, confused. You see, the matters of practice are quite different from belief. The mujtahid never says such a thing based on his belief. He may have a stronger viewpoint on justice than you have, but he cannot bring that in to somehow influence the sources which he is dealing with. He never bases this on a view of justice. He just goes to the sources. He says, this is what this hadith says, this is what this verse says, and then according to this, this is what I understand from it. Okay? Now, of course, viewpoints of mujtahids influence their fatawa. And that's why you have to find out who's the best mujtahid for you, who is the most knowledgeable that you think you have to follow. But whatever is an issue of practice is not based on opinions and beliefs. It's based on sources for mujtahid. Mujtahid always have to follow the sources. He may say, this is against my reason, this is against my rational understanding, but he says, this is what the source says, then I have to issue a fatwa according to this.
Assalamu alaikum. Supposing if two mujtahids have a view on a certain aspect, contradictory, and they both prove that they have the proofs, they are totally opposite. Who do we follow? And they have the proofs that they what they are saying is 100% correct. And they are two different sort of...
A mujtahid never says what I say is 100% correct. If a mujtahid says that, he's not a mujtahid. Mujtahid always, as I said, deals with conjectures. That based on than, this is what they say. They say any ruling that mujtahid issues is dhanni, is based on conjecture. This is what we believe, according to these sources, to be correct. And only they have, their authority is restricted to the area of practice. They cannot go beyond that. They cannot tell you what you should believe. They cannot tell you what is right and what is wrong. They cannot tell you this. They only can tell you, just like any other scientist, you see, they only can tell you that this is the practice which we think is correct. Now, mujtahids since all time, they had differences of opinion. They did not reject each other. They said, okay, you rely on this source, and you think this is more reliable or this has preponderance. I rely on this source. And I think this is more important and stronger. to rely upon. And then they come up with contradictory fatwa. In these cases, what a muqallid should do, of course, the mujtahideen since old time, they have established this rule that you find the most knowledgeable and follow them. Now, this is not a revelation. This is not al-wahyul munzal. In future, they may change this idea. They may say that, okay, let's divide fiqh into different areas. Or in different areas, you can follow different people. However, up till now, they have said, because no confusion should come up, because people should rely on someone who's most reliable in the field. So we follow one person. And as I said, because mujtahideen do not deal with mawzu'ats, with subjects, only rulings of God, one person may really be more knowledgeable in any field, because if they have this quality of strong ability to deduce rulings from the sources, then this applies in every field of fiqh. Our problem is that we think every question should be taken to mujtahid. This is wrong. Things which are not in the area of ijtihad, we shouldn't take these questions to them. And I don't think mujtahidun themselves would believe that they know everything in this world, or they can issue fatwa about everything in this world. So these are the things which I think may cause lots of ambiguities for lay people, but for mujtahideen, this is very clear for themselves.
Can I just add one thing? Now, in a controversial case, let's talk about the moon sighting. Why can't all the mujtahids, it's for the benefit of people, especially living in the Western countries, why can't they all say that, okay, because this is causing a lot of controversy, and there are, on three different days, they celebrate Eid or Ashura. Why can't they say that let's agree on something for the benefit of, especially the unity of the Muslims as well? Why can't they, all the mujtahids, say that, okay, let's decide on this and say that, okay, this is the Eid is going to be on this particular day?
Well, all mujtahids cannot come together and agree on one thing. I mean, they live in different parts of the world. They cannot come together and agree on one day. But there is a solution for this, a very, very simple solution. And that is the mujtahidun leave these to Waliyul Amr, to Hakim al-Shar. They do not mention anything. And Hakim al-Shar, because now these differences has occurred, Hakim al-Shar, someone who has authority, like, for example, Ayatollah Khamenei now has authority, has big authority, political authority, okay? Everyone leaves it to him, and he declares it. This has been the practice since old days, that when there is huge differences, there were always these huge differences among mujtahids, and they left it to Hakim al-Shar. And Hakim al-Shar usually said, I rule that this is it. Whether your fatwa is this or that, I rule that this is, and all other mujtahids followed, actually. So this is the simple solution. However, would everyone around the world accept this? They have all their own political views, they wouldn't accept this.
But then, Sheikh, there's Hakim al-Shar, Ayatollah Khamenei. I mean, I don't mind following him if he says that, okay, tomorrow is Eid.
He's not following anymore, you see?
Okay.
It's just a verdict. Okay, this is Eid. That's all. No matter what is your fatwa, what is your mujtahid, this is Eid. Yeah.
That's a very good point. Thanks very much. I think Sarfraz, yeah. Manzoor, then we'll come back to you. Yeah.
Sheikh, in that case, what is the difference between a ruling and a hukum? Because if you say this is Eid, well, Eid is a religious affair. Nobody can just say it without some religious backing, because it's not for me or anyone else to say it.
Yeah, the difference between fatwa and hukum is that fatwa is always based on general issues. If such and such happens, that's it. This is fatwa. And then there is this disagreement whether such and such has happened or has not. Hukm is that no matter what, I declare today, this is an insha, I declare today to be the Eid. This is the difference.
What right does he have to declare?
Because it's Hakim al-Shar, just because he's the leader of the community. Yes. That, as simple as that. Because he wants to have the community to be in organization, to be in a court, so he issues that ruling, and this is it.
Thank you. We can make a suggestion to our committee here. Okay, we go to the ladies first before I come to Brother
but
Manzoor.
But it doesn't work unless all other communities accept. You see, again, you have the same difference.
No, but at least for us here, inshallah. We go to the ladies first before I come to Brother
Manzoor. No, the first thing is that you have to actually ask Ayatollah Khamenei to issue a hukm. He never has issued a hukm up till now. It's only fatwa. So to issue a hukm means that he should accept that on the days of Eid, he declares that this is Eid. Or any other Hakim al-Shar, if there is any other Hakim al-Shar.
Okay, so we'll have to start communicating with him now, from now on. Okay, sisters, Brother Manzoor.
You know, you mentioned in the part of indecency is the fahsha. One of the examples you gave was the doing tawaf in nakedness. So if this is something which is fahsha, how did it become a practice so common and it was prevalent in the society? When it was a fahsha accepted by all, then how did it become a practice?
It's fahsha in eyes of Allah and fahsha in the eyes of any religion because it violates the rules of modesty. By the way, I mentioned something in the previous session that the best dress of every time is the dress of the people of that time. And this may have caused some confusion that, for example, some ladies may think that, okay, the ladies these days dress differently, so we have to follow them. Of course, this is conditioned on the condition that the rules of modesty are not violated, which is, of course, an overwhelming rule for every Sharia, for every religion. So, for example, the type of hijab that we may have today, according to the codes of modesty, may differ from the type of hijab that people wore at the time of the Prophet, peace be on him, or in different times. Now, indecency, of course, sometimes indecencies become quite common. Now, this nakedness has become quite common around the world. However, it is an indecency in the eyes of Sharia.
Thank you. Can I just ask one thing? This understanding or the acceptance of a certain thing, like, for example, this nakedness becoming common in a particular society, and then there is this understanding of this being fahsha in the eyes of Allah. And then the same thing in the eyes of the people or generally being accepted is slightly different. How can we distinguish between the two? What is common and acceptable and what is really fahsha in the eyes of Allah?
Well, again, we have to refer to the sources which tell us these things. And the highest guidance is certainly the Quran, which calls that nakedness to be fahisha. If Quran calls that nakedness to be fahisha, that means we have to follow it. There's no other way. We have to find out what God wants from us through the sources that we have.
Thank you. Any sisters? Sheikh, as we open up the discussion regarding the following either one mujtahid or different mujtahid, and in between the discussion as well, you raised the point now. We have been hearing this argument since times of Shayyid Sayyid Bakr al-Sadr. So this is going back to 30 years now. So and you mentioned that there is a discussion now going on amongst the ulama. So is it just at the level of discussion or there is a seriousness, and how many years still it will take before some kind of
maybe concrete... not for your lifetime.
Okay, then I can prepare my children for that. So.
Yeah. You know, ulama have no hurry. Al-ajalatu min al-shaytan.
Thanks. Any last comment or... Yeah, Riaz? Yeah, I think there is a mic there.
Thank you very much again for your lecture today. Sheikh, just a point of clarification. You said that taqlid is probably the wrong word to use for what we practice now in terms of referring to a specialist for our needs. So what would be the right term?
I think al-ruju' would be the better term, just referring.
But
al-ruju'. الرجوع إلى المجتهد instead of تقليد.
The difficulty is in common perception, that is, leaving your marja and going to another one is رجوع. That's the common understanding of the word.
Well, رجوع has different meanings, but the basic meaning of رجوع is reference. So, and that's why they are called marja. Marja means a point of reference. So probably رجوع would have been a better term than تقليد.
Thank you much indeed, Sheikh Muhammad Ali Muhammad Salawat.